This is news from North Country Public Radio.
This year, North Country Public Radio has been looking in-depth at the growth of the prison industry here in our region, across New York, and around the country. Over the last four decades, we've seen the number of men and women behind bars soar, many serving long, mandatory sentences for low-level crimes. One side effect of those tough-on-crime policies today is that the number of elderly inmates is surging, growing by almost 80% from 2000 through 2009. Prison officials across the U.S. are struggling to sort out what that means, how we think about and care for inmates who grow old and die in our prisons. In part one of our investigative report, Natasha Haverty found that despite recent reforms to the system, many terminally ill inmates are forced to remain behind bars, even when they no longer appear to be a threat to society. And even some prison officials think the process for allowing inmates to die at home needs fixing.
When I met Daryl Bidding in his room, the first thing I noticed was how small he looked, lying there in his bed.
But I'm a pretty strong-willed person. I mean, I really want, you know, I don't want to believe I'm going to die. You know, I don't want to believe I'm going to pass away, so I want to be able to be strong.
Earlier this year, Daryl was sent to Coxsackie, one of New York's maximum security prisons, on a drug possession charge. 11 days after he arrived, he was diagnosed with terminal cancer.
I feel like my insides is going to burst. It feels like a size of a, grapefruit or something. It's hot. It gets hot. I mean, it's agonizing because it's not going away.
From the moment doctors told Daryl there was nothing they could do for the tumor on his liver, his family started working to get him out of prison and back home. Era Habersham is Daryl's big sister.
Well, we didn't want him to die in there. He didn't want to die in there. Regardless to anything that happened, he's still our brother. And we all loved and cared about him.
Era and Daryl began working with a social worker, requesting the state of New York grant him compassionate release.
And then that was like the worst. I wrote letters. Everybody that was in Albany, I wrote letters.
Era had done her research. She knew the fight to get Daryl home wouldn't be easy. Every year, as many as several hundred inmates apply for compassionate release, but only an average of 12 actually make it home. For someone like Daryl to qualify for compassionate release, the prison administration asks two questions. First, is he sick enough? A doctor has to find his condition either permanently debilitating or fatal. The second question, does the inmate pose any risk to society?
And that's the gold standard that I apply. Do I feel that this patient, if released, would be a risk to reoffend on the outside?
That's Dr. Carl Koningsman, the person in New York State charged with answering both those questions for every inmate asking for compassionate release. Koningsman is the correction department's chief medical officer.
I look at these cases extremely carefully and consider them on their merit and only send what I feel are good cases on to the commissioner.
Koningsman's really the gatekeeper to a long process. Even when he does say yes to a case, Koningsman's boss, the prison commissioner, has to agree with his evaluation. And then the application goes on to the state parole board. They make the final decision. In Daryl's case, that decision came after 3 weeks.
All they say is, we don't think he's a candidate for medical parole at this time.
The answer was no. His sister, Era, says he was rejected without any reason.
That was it. They're telling this man that, you know, like he has a few months to live, but he's not a candidate for medical parole.
Era says she understands that the job of a prison is to keep people safe, but she says it was obvious to everyone, doctors, nurses, all the family members who made the trip up to see him, that her brother was dying. She says he wasn't a danger to anyone.
You're sitting in here watching him. You already know he can't come out here and do the same thing. You're looking at him on oxygen. So basically what they did was they watched him progressively die.
Critics of the compassionate release program say the process of getting someone out of prison to die at home just has too many steps, too many layers of bureaucracy. Dr. Bree Williams at UC San Francisco works in the field of end-of-life care and is an expert on compassionate release.
There are a number of problems. First, medical eligibility criteria are not uniform. A lot of people don't even know what they are, either the prisoners or the staff. Many current guidelines actually don't reflect the way that people actually experience serious illness or actually die. And programs can be very hard for potentially eligible prisoners to access.
Daryl's sister, Era, says she felt lost in that system. She appealed the parole board's decision, but for all of those letters she wrote, she got form letters in response.
I reached out, and it's like nobody tried to help me. I don't think that there's any empathy at all. There's none. You know, and the bottom line is, we have control over you. And when we feel like it, we're going to do it. And until we feel like it, that's what it is. That's it.
The afternoon I met Daryl, the weather outside was beautiful. But Daryl hadn't been outside, even out in the prison yard, in weeks.
It's too stressful for me to go outside. You know, and then I gotta get in that wheelchair and have somebody push me out there.
His fingers curled when he shifted his weight to sit up. By that point, Daryl's bid for compassionate release had been rejected twice already. On that day, he was waiting on a third decision from the parole board.
You know, they resubmitted the papers for me, so hopefully I'll be granted that step to go home. You know, God willing. I think they're going to grant me medical parole.
A month later, the parole board finally approved Daryl's request. But even then, the corrections department didn't send him home, telling his sister, Era, they were just arranging the final details of his release.
They still held him. And it was always a reason. Every single day, something different. But hold on. All this time we fighting this, if y'all even had an inclination that you guys were going to eventually give it to him, how come all those things wasn't addressed then?
There are signs that prison officials around the country are trying to make it simpler for some dying inmates to get home. A few months ago, Attorney General Eric Holder gave a speech announcing reforms to the federal compassionate release program.
Policy, including revised criteria for elderly inmates who did not commit violent crimes and who have served significant portions of their sentences.
And in the past 2 years, New York has also amended its compassionate release law. In theory, those changes make it possible for more people like Daryl to apply. But so far, they haven't worked. Last year, 101 people applied for compassionate release. Just 11 of them went home. Carl Koningsman, the Department of Corrections chief medical officer, actually agrees there are too many steps, too many people like Daryl getting bottled up in the system.
If I had my way of building this, I would like to see that we would have the discretion. When I see something that to me is grossly obvious, this person needs to go. I don't see why it has to go to the parole board.
Dr. Bree Williams, the expert on end-of-life care and medical parole, says more families with loved ones behind bars are grappling with this bureaucracy.
The number of older prisoners continues to skyrocket. And absent a major shift in policies related to long sentences and mandatory minimum sentences, we're going to continue to see the percentage of prisoners that are older rise.
9 days after his approval came, Daryl finally left prison. He was sent to a nursing home in Far Rockaway, Brooklyn. Era and her family, Daryl's kids, his grandchildren, all came to be with him. But she says she's not sure her brother even knew where he was by then, if he even knew he'd made it out.
By the time they took him out of there, he was in a condition that was horrible. So they waited for that point. They waited it out. They didn't care about him. He was just a number. The way they did him, he didn't deserve that. Not at all.
On the 28th of June, 2013, around 2 in the morning, Daryl passed away. After 2 days of freedom, 2 days with his family, Daryl was gone. For North Country Public Radio and the Prison Time Media Project, I'm Natasha Haverty.
Tomorrow, our series continues. We visit the program New York prisons offer the men and women who don't make it home. At Coxsackie Prison, inmates can train to become hospice aides charged with looking after their fellow prisoners facing the last days of life.
Every day that I get, I appreciate it to the fullest because I see these guys, some of these guys dying in their 30s, 40s, and I really would not want that to be me.
Tune in for part two tomorrow morning. And right now at ncpr.org, Brian Mann blogs about why we don't talk about prisons. They're the elephant in the room of the North Country's culture and economy.
Digital distribution of North Country Public Radio news and features is funded by gifts from listeners like you. Join us at ncpr.org.